You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the third and final hour of tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards, and listen, we have an incredible trio of guests, the second of which is with us now. You heard from Richard Spencer earlier. Sam Dixon still forthcoming this evening, but now we have the one and only Dr. Kevin MacDonald. Kevin MacDonald, PhD, a former professor of psychology at California State University, Long Beach, is the author of several books, including The Culture of Critique and Cultural Insurrections. He's going to be with us tonight to talk about the psychological torture our people face and which way we go moving forward. Dr. MacDonald, it is great to have you back on the broadcast tonight. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Hey, James. Great to be here, as always.
Well, we appreciate it, and I know our audience does every time you appear. You wrote a great article. I know you had a family conflict a few days ago. I guess it was the broadcast, last broadcast we had, or we had attempted to reach you then. But you had posted a great article to your website, The Occidental Observer, entitled Charleston Cognitive Psychology and Media Influence. I know it's been a few days since you wrote it, but could you recall by memory the article and break it down for our audience, the message you were trying to convey?
Yeah, this was in reaction to the events in Charleston with Bill and Roof and so on. Psychologists sometimes try to have done research on how people sort of make these systematic errors in their judgment about the probability of certain events. Like, you take an event like a shark attack or an airplane crash versus something more mundane, like, you know, dying in a car accident or dying of some disease or something like that. It's actually much more, you're actually much more likely to die in a car accident or of quite a few diseases than you are from getting attacked by a shark or an airplane crash. But if there is an airplane crash, you know, it's all over the media. It's a huge event. You'll never forget it, probably, or it'll take a long time to forget it. And shark attacks, too, they're very dramatic. They're quite unusual, actually, but when they do happen, you know, it's bloody, it's gory, it's horrifying, and it's all over the media. But that's sort of what's happening with Charleston. You know, it gives you a biased perception of reality because, this thing happened in Charleston, and immediately it is all over every media outlet in America. And there's all this hand-wringing and, just going crazy about it in a very moralistic way and all that. So it's the kind of thing that if you're watching any kind of media, you're going to remember this. You're not going to forget this for a very, very long time. Whereas, in fact, black-on-white crime is far more common, but it's never reported. It may be only one person or a rape or something like that, but you're not going to hear about it in a national newspaper. You're not going to hear the statistics. You're not going to, be exposed to that kind of stuff. So it's easy to ignore it. It's easy to think that the real problem in America is white racism and white violent, murderous activity against blacks. That's the real problem. When, in fact, as we all know, black on white crime is far more common, but you just don't read about it unless you go to, if you listen to radio programs like this, or you go to VDare or Ammon or something like that, you will definitely hear about those things. But most people don't do that, and so this is going to warp people's understanding of those events.
Well, I of course you speak the truth and the truth to power. But one thing I was so intrigued about in having the opportunity to bring you back on the program for this particular story and this particular topic is that this is your profession. This is your area of expertise as a former professor of psychology at a major American university. You, of all the people we could have brought on to offer commentary on this issue, are the most suited to discuss this particular aspect of the war being waged against our people. And so I ask you your opinion. How effective is all of this media, this incessant drumbeat, as I call it, in instilling in the minds of our people a negative psychological effect in terms of them standing up and speaking out for their self-interest as European Americans?
I think it's very effective. I agree. That terminology, the incessant drumbeat, is absolutely right. We get it, you know, children get it in grade school now. They get it in commercials, almost all the commercials we watch on television, in the movies. It's just everywhere. And it induces a sense of guilt, a sense of inferiority. I just heard that MTV is putting out some kind of video series on whiteness, you know, and it's put out by this Filipino homosexual illegal immigrant named Vargas. And, of course, you know, it interviews whites who are horribly guilty. They cry with shame about being white. And that's exactly what the media wants to see. I mean, they love that the idea that whites have no confidence in their culture, that their first thought when they think of whiteness is guilt. And you know, certainly what happened in Charleston feeds into that. Because, you know, again, it's not just that they're going to overestimate white-on-black crime, but, you know, it's going to further feed into this white guilt thing that is just constantly harped on in the media. And that is another aspect of this, that it's part of this incessant war, really, on whites and their culture that we see every day and seems to be accelerating in recent weeks.
It has gotten more hate-fueled in the last few weeks, and it was obviously egregious before then. Every movie, every newspaper report, every magazine article that deals with these topics deals with it in the same voice. They all speak with the same voice. You know, they cry for diversity, but apparently they mean diversity in all things except opinion, because there is no other opinion that comes from the establishment media. And I'll give you, you know, we could draw 100,000 examples, but, you know, it's important to know some of the stuff that they put out there. And, of course, there was a big Oscar-winning film, The Butler, that came out. I guess it was last year or the year before. I watched The Butler with Forrest Whitaker and Oprah Winfrey just to see, you know, the narrative. And, of course, the narrative is whites are evil. We know that. But in the first scene of The Butler, Forrest Whitaker's character, it was in the early 1900s, long after the war between the states. But in the first scene, Forrest Whitaker as a young boy, his character is out in the field picking cotton with his father and his mother and a few other, they wouldn't have been slaves by that point, but they were, I guess, you know, sharecroppers or whatever, just like my, you know, grandparents were. Anyway, the overseer comes out of his house, the first scene of the movie, takes the black woman's wife, takes her to a barn, rapes her, then comes out and shoots the man in the head for no reason at all. This is the opening scene of this fictitious movie, the opening scene of the movie. Now, that just never happened in the South, but, I mean, this is what we're up against. And, of course, this movie is given honors, you know, at the Oscars. But, anyway.
Absolutely.
That just one example of 100,000 we could draw from, but this is what we're up against, and we're talking with the expert on this, Dr. Kevin McDonald, about the negative psychological effects that this sort of false narrative has in the hearts and minds of our people, and we'll continue this conversation right after this.
Many of you have heard me talk about my Vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is all this Vigor stuff about? Well, Vigor is defined as zest for life, your strength in body and mind, your energy levels. It's kind of all wrapped into a term called Vigor. Would you like to improve your Vigor score? Well, you got to first take the free test. Get a hold of Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com or call Kurt Cosby at 801-669-2211. I took the test, got a 13 out of 32. Horrible, huh? But I worked on it with Kurt with some natural help and healing, and before you know it, now I've got an astounding 29 out of 32 on the Vigor score. Can you tell by the way I talk? Oh, yes, my zest for life has never been better. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. That's 801-669-2211, and take your free Vigor test today, and you can learn where you stand. And then you can work on improving it and take the test again, and, oh, compare the results. You will be delighted. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com or 801-669-2211 for your free Vigor score test today.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And now back to tonight's show.
Well, we're with the expert, ladies and gentlemen, a true hero. I don't offer the word hero up unless it's absolutely earned. Kevin McDonald is a hero of our people and a hero for the truth. And we're talking about pathological altruism and the way the media has manipulated this affliction that only seems to manifest itself in the minds and the brains of our people. To lead us to absolutely advocating for and cheering for our own destruction. Would you agree with that, Kevin? And for the benefit of those perhaps tuning into this show for the first time tonight, would you give a very brief explanation as to what pathological altruism is?
Yes, it's a very important point you're making there. Pathological altruism, right now on Actual Observer, if you look in the video corner in the upper right-hand side there, I've got a video of this woman. I think her name's Kimberly Smith, and she helps black orphans in Africa, in Sudan and Darfur and all that. She was gang-raped by I don't know how many men at a border kind of crossing or something like that. But so the interview is about, you know, why would you want to go back? And you just see her rationalizing it. You know, it's not really their fault. You know, they're really good people, but they've been subjected to so much, and we just have to keep helping them. Pathological altruism is when you're so altruistic that you are doing things to help others that actually hurt you. I mean, she's putting herself in an extremely dangerous situation. A gang rape is a horrifying, traumatic event for any woman. And yet she goes back because she's got these ideals. She wants to help people. And as a psychiatrist, you know, there are certain personality traits that are involved in this. People like this are sort of, it's almost like they're too nice. They're too loving. You know, it's good to be loving, good to be affectionate, good to be empathic. People like that make good members of a family. But when you get to the point where you are so loving, that you just give of yourself to the complete destruction of yourself, and that's pathology. And you'll see all these photos in there of her with all these black people. You know, she sort of lives in this black world where she's helping these people. and that's the highest value in her life. And yes, it seems to be far more common among white people. I think that's because we evolved in this northern environment, hunter-gatherer environment, a lot of us, and where family ties were critical. If you think about, you know, being a father or mother in the Ice Age, if you were a father and you just, you know, left your family, they're going to die. You know, they couldn't survive. So strong family bonds and affection for people within the family, that's a very important part of us. But when it gets extreme, it becomes pathological. And we see it over and over again among white people. A lot of those people who are crying on an MTV thing in self-abnegation, you know, they're just putting themselves down and hating themselves. You know, it's this sense that they're guilty. They've done something horrible. Well, that, you know, if you are a really empathic, you know, loving person and you feel you really have done wrong, well, that's what happens. You feel guilty. Guilt is a very powerful emotion. It's internal, you know. It's not something like, if you feel guilty, it really doesn't matter if anybody else knows about it. Shame is when you feel bad because somebody else knows about it. You know, you've embarrassed yourself and everybody's laughing at you. Guilt is when you feel bad and it doesn't matter if anybody knows about it. You have violated some moral stricture. And you're therefore a bad person. You feel it inside. Well, this woman, you know, is just at that extreme. And unfortunately, there's an awful, awful lot of people like that. You know, we're not just a majority of people. I wouldn't say pathological altruism is a pathology. And it's a small minority of even white people. But, you know, it's enough to be high profile, you know. And these people are oftentimes a sort of, what we see oftentimes is that people try to sort of outshine each other on how altruistic they are. They compete. You know, I'm more empathic than you are. It becomes a status game, you know, where the most empathic, the most kind-hearted person wins. The most anti-racist, the most anti-white person is the best person. And so we see this kind of status competition over being a good person, and it's absolutely destructive. You know, I mean, no other people do that. There's no other people that engages in this kind of behavior like this. We are unique, but it's a pathology that we have, and we have to try to get over it. You know, we have to understand it. I think that's the first thing, is to understand it.
Well, a lot of the understanding that we have on this topic is a result of your groundbreaking work, Dr. McDonald, and we thank you for that. And of course, to reiterate what Kevin said, you know, we also cherish the virtues of being philanthropic and being charitable and being good to all of humanity. And there's certainly nothing wrong with doing good things for people of other races or ethnicities, but when you love other people more than you love your own family, then it does become something. When you are in your mind so good, quote unquote, to the point where it hurts yourself and hurts the best interests of your children, then you're getting into the area of a pathology, and that's of course what we're talking about. I want to remind everybody to support the groundbreaking, and I use that word very soberly, the groundbreaking work of Dr. Kevin McDonald, by going to his website, theoccidentalobserver.net. There you can read all of his recent writings. He's always putting up excellent content. Donate to his work as well. Kevin, I would ask you this with the minute we have remaining. I guess it's a two-part question, and again, we're looking at maybe 60 seconds. How is it that people like you and I are different, that we didn't become afflicted with this pathology, and is there a cure for it? I mean, what can we do for our people moving forward to say that, you know what, yes, be kind to everybody, but charity begins at home? What made us different? How can others be fixed?
Well, there's probably a lot of different forces for different people. In my own case, I think of myself as a pretty kind, you know, loving person. I've always had good family relationships and all that, but I think a lot of it just was to understand it. Just the more I read about this, the more I just realized what was going on. And I've never been altruistic to the point of pathology. You know, I think that really draws a line. And I could just see that, you know, as a Darwinist, as an evolutionist, I understand the importance of self-interest. I mean, in evolutionary biology, altruism is an evolutionary dead end. By definition, altruists help others to the detriment of themselves. Those genes won't get passed on. So it's an absolute pathology, not only in a sort of everyday sense, but absolutely in a scientific Darwinian sense. That is a sort of end game. You can't be altruistic and survive. So I started to really realize those things, and the more I read, I came to the conclusion that we had to stand up for ourselves, that this is just crazy what's going on.
I want to thank you again so much for your expertise, for your wisdom and your guidance. And again, folks, you know, we're having some of the heavy hitters on the program tonight. Richard Spencer, Dr. McDonald, Sam Dixon coming up next. Again, folks, do yourself a favor. Support the work of this man, theoccidentalobserver.net. Kevin, I count your friendship.
Well, thanks,
Jay.
I want to say just thank you. You do so much, and this radio program is so important and so effective. So I want to thank you too. You're doing great work.
Well, thank you so much for that. And certainly I want to let the audience know that I consider my friendship with you a tremendous blessing and a force of good in my life. And it's always a pleasure to talk to you and have you on this program. Look forward to seeing you again soon when our paths will cross at gatherings coming up later in the year. But until then, Godspeed to you, my friend. And as always, keep up the good work.
Thank you. Bye.
Dr. McDonald, everybody, one in a million, one in 100 million, a university professor of psychology speaking out for what's right and what's true. We'll be back with Sam Dixon right after this.
Exposing corruption. Informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. Are you a native son or daughter of the South who bleeds the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Travelers Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. You're home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
Listen, do you hear that sound? It started low, but it's getting progressively louder. Into a crescendo, even louder. Irresistible, ending in an ear-splitting blast of mass disruption. That's the sound of America's economic and political systems crashing to the ground. But we have a plan. We will be ready to restore political sanity. We will be ready to answer the call of productive America. We will restore America's industrial base and put America back to work. We will shut down political correctness and restore decency and positive media to America. We will save our Constitution, our traditional way of life, our customs, and religion. We will restore sound money and crush the debt-based system of monetary slavery. And we will end America's foreign misadventures. We are the American Freedom Party, and we have a plan. Learn more about us, the American Freedom Party. US.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody, welcome back to tonight's show. Happy to have you. I want to share with you something that was sent in by our former producer and engineer in studio, Art Frith. You know, Art Frith is a Navy chief, retired, and he has written something that is very, very good in response to the Memphis City Council's attempts to remove the remains of Nathan Bedford Forrest. And I would ask if our current producer could call the guest. He just tried to contact me, so I hope I gave you the right number. So he is around. But this is what Art Frith, former Navy chief, writes to the members of the Memphis City Council and mayor. I understand that the grave and statue of a veteran offends you, and that is unfortunate. It's clear that none of you learned anything regarding United States history in high school or college. Let me give you a brief refresher course. Confederate soldiers, sailors, and Marines that fought in the Civil War were made U.S. veterans by an act of Congress in 1957. U.S. Public Law 85-425, Section 410, approved on 23rd of May, 1958. This made all Confederate Army, Navy, Marine veterans equal to all U.S. military veterans. Also, under U.S. Public Law 810, approved by the 17th Congress on the 26th of February, 1929, the War Department was directed to erect headstones and recognize Confederate grave sites as U.S. war dead grave sites. In case you forgot or just did not know, the last Confederate veteran, John Sailing, died in 1958 at the age of 112. As of 2013, which is the last we know of, Mr. Sailing had one child to whom the United States government still paid a pension to. So, in the case of General Nathan Bedford Forrest, when you remove a Confederate statue, monument, or headstone, you are, in fact, removing a statue, monument, or headstone honoring a United States veteran. Will you now go to the National Cemetery on Towns Avenue and demand that any and all Confederate flags be removed from the graves of fellow veterans there? And that is signed by Art Frith, Chief Petty Officer, United States Navy, retired. And, of course, he is as well our former producer and engineer here for this radio program. And he sent that to the members of the Memphis City Council and the mayor of the city of Memphis. We now have with us our final of three outstanding guests tonight. You've already heard from Richard Spencer and Dr. Kevin McDonald. Now we have the closer, the one and only Sam Dixon. Sam, where to begin? There's so much to talk about. I'm sure you've been watching this, well, I would say in horror, but perhaps in the glee, knowing that at some point our people will have to push back. When you watch the events that have unfolded since Charleston, what's your reaction and response, my friend?
Well, there's an emotional response of anger, as I think everybody in your audience feels and you feel. You can't help but dislike seeing the people who hate us and who want us to be destroyed, savoring their triumph. But on the other hand, like you're saying, we all knew this was coming. Yeah, it had to be. If it were any other way, everything that we know about the regime in America and the system in America and how it works and what its goals are would be proven false. You know, we know how much the regime and the system hate Southerners in particular and whites in general, and how they are colonizing our country, how they are conducting a so-called educational system, which is nothing more than psychological abuse from kindergarten all the way through graduate or law school. So you knew this had to happen. We know the kind of trash that has risen, the scum that has risen to the top of the stream in America. And when you deal with people like these 37 South Carolina senators who voted to take the flag down, the 50 leading members of the Chamber of Commerce in South Carolina who voted unanimously to take the flag down because it interfered with their making money. When we know that our system produces a leadership that is drawn from the scum and is heavily sociopathic in every avenue of life, the removal of the flag is inevitable. And the banning of the Confederate flag in the cemeteries is inevitable. And the destruction of the forest lawn is inevitable. Just as the destruction of the removal of George Washington from the dollar bill is inevitable. It has to be.
Well, Sam, your prescient here in your commentary, because, and I've already mentioned this twice now in the broadcast, but certainly, as you already have predicted and as we all know to be true, it doesn't stop here. You can never reach a point to where you have effectively curried favor with your enemy and those who, as I have said tonight, and as you've also said in your brief appearance thus far, those who hate us, you can never salve their hatred. And so now, true to form, Don Lemon on CNN says it's now time to rethink the Jefferson Monument. There have been other talking heads who have already suggested that Washington, D.C. itself be renamed. There is no point at which they will find a stopping point. What is the end game here, Sam, and what are we to do?
Well, we have to do what James Everest does and what I, in my own little way, try to do with what limited resources we have. We keep the little candle of truth flickering. We keep the foot in the door to keep them from slamming the door on public discussion and truth entirely, which is what they want to do. And we take solace in the fact that those who hate reality and truth will find that reality and truth will come to them not as a friend but as an enemy. And no matter, you cannot repeal the natural law. He that sitteth in the heavens will laugh. The effort to create an unnatural society failed in the Soviet Union, despite three generations of mass murder and oppression and so on. It failed because no amount of coercion and lies and government indoctrination could make communism as an unnatural, inhuman system work. And what we have in America is not much different from communism under Stalin or Lenin or Trotsky. It is an unnatural system that is at war with truth. And truth will ultimately prevail. And the most important thing for our people is to disengage from the system. It's to pull the plug. This is a harsh statement, and it will be misinterpreted by the Heidi Beirisches and Mark Potocks and the other racist Jews who hate us. But the George Bush the First once said that if you see the American flag passing by in Old Glory painting the breeze, and you don't have a thrill in your spine, then you're part of the problem. No. I think we're coming to the point now that if you have a little thrill when the Northern flag or the flag of the system's flag is carried by, you're part of the problem. We've got to secede psychologically. We failed to secede geographically in 1861 to 65. But we can secede psychologically. And people who keep whites who keep putting up, Southern whites who keep hanging out the federal flag and putting bumper stickers on their car about backing our boys and women in Afghanistan, and Southerners who rush to sign up when something like 9/11 happens, and we're all New Yorkers now. You're never going to have people in New York saying we're all Mississippians now. They're never going to do that. It's a one-way street. And so Southerners have got to stop putting those bumper stickers on their car. They've got to stop putting flags out to support a regime that hates them. They have to pull the plug. They've got to let the little glow die and understand that this government hates them and has hated them for decades, and whites in general in America. It isn't a geographical thing. You know, they hate for all of Garrison Keillor and Lake Wobegon and all that on Western National Public Radio. They hate the Lutheran farmers of Minnesota almost as much as they hate the crackers in the Piedmont of South Carolina. You know, they hate Christopher Columbus. They treated 1992, the 500th anniversary, as the commemoration of a great mistake. You know, it was a mistake for Columbus to come to America and for Europeans to come here. It's a terrible thing that we even exist.
Well, with that being said, and of course, many Columbus statues have been defaced in the wake of the Black Lives Matter so-called movement that has spawned from Charleston and taken a new life since Charleston. We're going to continue this conversation with Sam Dixon right after this.
Hello, everyone. James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R-word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new Constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads. A divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is again the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour. There's something really fun and exciting about discovering products that make life more pleasant and enjoyable. Well, Miracle 2 soaps definitely fit that description. The shelves at the supermarket are packed with soaps and cleansers that are full of chemicals that slowly destroy our health and the environment. Miracle 2 products are all natural, like the green soap that can replace your bath, laundry, household soaps, and cleaning products. And please try Miracle 2's skin lotion. It's quickly absorbed and not greasy like all those other mass-produced lotions. Miracle 2 moisturizer is full of fabulous oils and emollients that leave the skin healthy and baby soft. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. Just call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. You'll learn why so many people say it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody. It's hard to believe, but we now find ourselves in the final segment of tonight's show. I think this show, I don't say this flippantly, but I believe this show may go down as one of our most important and inspired and determined programs in the history of this, of the 10 years of this broadcast. I hope that I'm not investing too much into that, but I believe This show feels very special to me, and the guests that we've had have certainly made it so. Richard Spencer, Kevin McDonald, Sam Dixon, all mainstays to be sure, but tonight has been special, even above and beyond what has become a very hearty status quo. But I believe what Sam was talking about in the last segment echoes Christ's directive to us, in that we should be in the world but not of the world, to succeed mentally and claim for ourselves the moral high ground. Well, it's a start. You know, one of the victims of this oppressive war of cultural genocide that we find being waged ferociously over the course of the, well, decades, as Sam mentioned, but particularly the last couple of weeks, you know, even Gone with the Wind is now a victim of this. I have read that they are going to scrub all reruns of the Dukes of Hazzard from television and not air rebroadcasts of Gone with the Wind. They want Gone with the Wind, Gone with the Wind. But Sam, there is a scene in Gone with the Wind, but that I believe you have taken note of in the past. It's a scene in which the Confederates are on the retreat, and you can fill me in. Are you familiar?
Yeah, when they're leaving Atlanta, and Rhett Butler says that they will turn and stand again and fight again. And this is true. I can't believe that you know, 100 million Americans of British extraction and 120 million white people of other related European nationalities are just ultimately going to just walk off the stage of history and cease to exist without there being, at some point, a reaction. We've waited a long time for a reaction. It's surprising that it's taking so long, but, you know, it may yet happen. And I hope it will.
You know, we have talked about this. I mean, certainly we hope that it will too. I mean, everybody, every race, every ethnicity has a right to self-determination. And, of course, they would agree with us on that, except for our people. They would agree with us that everybody, except for our people. And, you know, so I ask, now that we see the church under attack, you know, especially in the wake of the Supreme Court's most recent horrific decision, we're going to find that Christianity will now become under attack, increasingly so, now that the Confederate flag is pretty much in the rearview mirror in their minds. We're going to rethink the Jefferson Memorial. We're going to rethink the name of Washington, D.C., Christian churches. I think this is a good thing. I want to see, and I say this as a Christian, I want to see the Christian church harshly persecuted, because we have got to get tougher. I would rather see the Christian church in this country go underground than maintain its half-awake, milquetoast offerings that we've been getting every Sunday from most of the major denominations and from most pulpits. Do you think at some point we will hit the wall and we'll turn? Do you think there's anything, perhaps the attack on the church itself, that will cause our people? At which, do we have a breaking point? What possibly could the breaking point be if we haven't crossed it already?
I think when people feel cornered, they will do something. Even a rat, when it's cornered, will fight. And why? It's a big country, and with gas having been cheap and the highways built after World War II, the survival strategy of white people has been to move one more expressway exit up the road and to let their neighborhoods be taken. This is in stark contrast in Europe, where the Greeks and the Spaniards spent centuries under oppressive, vicious Muslim rule that didn't move away. They held their turf. In America, Americans retreat. They run. These colors do run in America. We've seen scores of millions of them run from their neighborhoods. Well, eventually, the oil will run out. The gas will be $20 a gallon, and there'll be no further room for retreat. And they'll have to do something. And we have to remember that our enemies believe that human psychology is just if they can control all the stuff that goes into the brain, they can control the product. And to some extent, that's true, but I don't think it's completely true. You know, an abused child will seek more desperately to win his parents' love than a child that has normal parents. And whites in America, Southern whites who rushed off to volunteer for the system's war on Afghanis and Iraqis, when Bush the first was president. They like abused children. You know, they wanted to show, oh, we'll show how much we love America, and maybe Daddy America will love us. Well, no, Daddy America is not capable of loving you. Daddy America will always hate you. He will always be a nasty, abusive parent. Eventually, abused children turn on their parent. Now, most of them come at some point to realize it's not my fault that my father beats me with coat hangers or that my mother constantly belittles and humiliates me. It's their problem. They are sick, and I need to get away from them. And I think at some point, you know, white people in America may come to that. Their psychology may be like abuse children. They will come to realize that people like Hillary Clinton and others who keep the constant criticism up, all this, like you were saying before we went off the air, the idea that, oh, if we just give the flag up, they'll be happy then, and they'll forgive us, and we can all be sitting down at Dr. King's table of brotherhood together. At some point, they can realize there's never going to be a place for us at Dr. King's table of brotherhood. Dr. King never intended for us to be invited to that table. That was just a metaphor that he used as part of his war upon white people. And there will never be a place for us at that table. They will always want more. They'll always be blaming us for their problems. They will always be seeking more. You heard it today on National Public Radio. They were interviewing people at the State House in South Carolina. And these people, various blacks, were saying, this is just the beginning. This isn't anything. It doesn't represent anything. The day before, they were saying it was so important to get the flag done. Now they've got their way. This isn't even 1% of what we need. Yeah. So they will keep pushing. They will make us become what we ought to be. They will force white men someday to be manly again.
Well, I hope that day is hastened, Sam. And my goodness, you know, not that we want, you know, and certainly I know I speak for you, and I speak for this audience. You know, we don't want to see inflicted upon anyone what has been inflicted upon us. I have no hatred in my heart for any other group of people, but I certainly don't love anyone as much as I love my own family. And that gets back to everything that motivates our action is the defense of those with whom we share.
Let others defend. We want to carry our race to even greater triumphs than it's ever known before. We're not here to defend. We're here to promote, to advance.
Well,
let others defend. We are seeking something far more than a defensive operation. But now, I would urge you to consider this. You know, it's like Elie Wiesel said that every Jew should set apart a part of his heart to eternal hatred of the German. I have no hatred for the blacks who are out there hooping and hollering to take the flag down. They're behaving normally. They have a race like Rosa Parks. They're loyal to their race. Well, the people I hate, but I do hate some people. I hate those 37 members of the South Carolina Senate devoted to take the flag down. I hate the 50 leading members of the Chamber of Commerce of South Carolina who unanimously voted to throw the Chamber of Commerce's influence against us and against their ancestors. I tell people, I have no hatred for black people or Jews. They act normally. The people I hate are the rank breakers in our own people. And that's where it begins. It has to come through a complete and total financial and social ostracism of people like those people and their families.
No, I agree. I have said that. If I have a disdain for anyone, it is certainly our, you know, for lack of a better word, kinsmen. It's hard to.
You want your child playing with the child of one of those U.S. senators?
No, absolutely not. And I'll tell you.
Would you let your child play with the child of someone who had a pedophile sex ring whorehouse in Memphis? No, you would not. If I had children, I wouldn't want them associating with the children of these people in the state senate. I would just assume that the children of these state senators are like them. And I wouldn't want, and their wives have to be like this.
No, I agree, Sam. We're out of time, but I tell you, you're always one of the most fascinating interviews. I would say every team needs a good offense and a good defense, but I certainly agree with you that we must go on the offense because we have done nothing but defense for far too long. Sam, we appreciate you. We love you. Thanks for being on, and we'll see everybody else next week. Good night. Sam Dixon, good night from Memphis. We'll see you next week. I'm James Edwards. Godspeed.